Welcome back, everyone, to Innovative Leadership. I'm your host, Ryan Stickle. With me, as always, my co-host, Stephanie Hurd.
Hello, and welcome back.
And we're back here at Innovative HQ, staying in-house once again. We're making the rounds here. This one, not even down the hallway. This is a person who sits at a desk right pretty much between me and Steph. Lauren Rappaport is here. Lauren, she is the sales support manager here at Innovative. How's it going?
It's going well. How about you guys?
Doing all right.
Very excited to finally have you on the show.
Yes, very excited to be here.
What are your thoughts now that the recording has officially started? Because it's easy to ask how you're feeling beforehand.
I'm feeling much better.
Yeah, once we actually get into it, it's a little more comfortable. I always ask people because it's like, it's hard to, even I get just a tiny bit nervous before I start. It's like, let me just not screw up the intro. Because once we're into it, it's like, whatever.
Yeah, it's funny. Everyone always tells us that they're nervous before and they're like terrified. And then whenever it's over, they're like, I don't know what I was worried about. We just talked. It was like, yes, we just talk. Yeah, that's all we do.
Just feels like a conversation like we normally have
that's
out there.
The idea.
It's right. Up here.
You just have to kind of like unnaturally point your head just to make sure we're not like swaying from the mic. All right. Well, we'll get into it here. So for people who don't know, you may have recognized the last name. Your dad is the founder and CEO and president here at Innovative. So you're pretty well versed in that. I don't have to ask how you found out about Innovative.
Nope, it was always there.
But you've lived a whole life. You've had your own professional career. So as always, I will ask you to jump right into that wherever you want to start, wherever it feels relevant to jump off at. It might be very early in life here, but I'll let you have the floor for a minute.
Sure. So I feel like before Innovative, I've kind of like lived two different lives, both like in DC and Virginia. I went to school at American University in Washington, D.C., and I just stayed down there. I loved living in D.C. I love the accessibility to museums and just so much to offer. Like, you can just go on a walk and hit so many different things. So that it was very important for me to stay down in D.C. And that was kind of like my first. I was like, okay, Innovative is not in D.C. yet, so I need to do my own thing. And I ended up working at a very cool art space. And worked there for about 3.5 years and just kind of made my way through the company. I ended up working as an executive assistant for the majority of it. And after that, I just felt a little, the pandemic happened and the art industry was a little chaotic. So I wanted something a little bit different to move into. And I ended up going to be a general manager at a coffee shop in Alexandria. And that was crazy because I had never worked in a restaurant or like any type of cafe like industry. So it was truly like I had never even just worked as a waitress or anything. So I was going in as a general manager and had to basically convince everybody that I was qualified to do this and was able to lead them. And it was a lot of fun, but I did miss a lot of like the flexibility of work. Like you have working at a coffee shop, you have to be at the coffee shop every single day.
Yeah.
And so I was missing a lot, like my connection to Hagerstown. Like I would often come back, even when I was living in DC, I was visiting my family often and all of that. And so it just made sense for me to start looking at moving back to Hagerstown. And then it just also happened, there was a position that I could move into at Innovative. I felt that at that point, I had kind of put my own mark on the world and had a decent enough experience. So was it the true like Nepo baby series like scenario? Because I was very conscious of that, especially like as that became like more of a term that people were talking about. I'm like, I do not want to be a Nepo baby.
Yeah.
And all of that.
Yeah. So, we can dive into that for a second if you want. Like that's such an interesting dynamic to come into a company. And like I know like what there's several people here who've kind of been here for the long haul that you knew already. And so it's like a strange dynamic where it's like, yes, you're coming into a new job, but there's this whole other, you know, like I mentioned, it's like the last name, you have it coming in.
And yeah.
Like, what was that like coming in? And like, do you feel like you were maybe like, do you feel like people treated you differently? Like, how was that dynamic going when you first got here?
So I wouldn't say like I necessarily noticed people treating me differently other than people being like, oh, I've seen you before hanging out in your parents' office and now you actually have a desk space here. And I think it was just important for me, like just knowing that I just had to put my head down, do the work and make sure my results spoke for themselves.
Right.
Because I know I can say like, oh, I'm a hard worker. I'm willing to put in the effort and all of that. But still people are going to see that, oh, you're the daughter of the business owner and you could have just gotten the job because of that and not because of anything else.
Right.
So it was, again, very important for me to make sure I was putting in the work and all of that. But nobody at Innovative, like, outright was like, oh, like, you're the Nepo baby here. Like, yeah. You shouldn't be here. Like, there was none of that.
Probably speaks to our culture a little bit as well, you know?
And I know, like, on the flip side, I saw, your dad was also very conscious of that. And even we had the benefit of working together a little bit before you officially came on as a full-time employee at Innovative when you were still working in DC. I think I had just come into the marketing position and needed some additional help doing like graphic design stuff, the artsy stuff that I'm not, that's the part of marketing that I'm not great at. So I needed a little help. And when I was, I reported to Jason, your dad, and I was talking about, hey, like, this is the type of resource that I have. And he was very cognizant about, so like, my daughter actually has those skills, but please don't feel like I'm making you work with her. And I looked at your resume and like, we worked together, your experience and your fit for what I needed at that time stood on its own.
Yeah.
And I feel like that has carried through.
Yeah. So like, before I officially started working here full time, like, at least I had been kind of a name that was around in somewhat of a professional setting other than just daughter of the owner or daughter of the CFO too. So that was a comfortable aspect. And I also came to, like, we have our mandatory funds, and I made sure I went to one before I even officially started. And I had like talked with like quite a few people. So I was already pretty comfortable with a lot of people that have worked here. And again, like, I just knew I needed to come in and actually do the work, and that should be good.
I would imagine that would help coming in just to have like some familiarity, because new jobs are just so scary. Like, I imagine, still being a new job, like, it had those aspects. But man, just knowing a few names, like knowing where your job is, like where to walk in and stuff like that. Like, I imagine that was really helpful. And
yeah, having some of that background information definitely took away some of that like first aid jitters. And it was, the rest of it was just mostly making sure that I was okay and all of that, and just keeping my nerves in check, because I was still anxious to go to the first meeting and whatnot, introduce myself. But it very quickly melted away.
What, on the flip side, outside of even just this company being part of your family, one thing that I always think about, because I did not grow up in this area, so I don't have that experience of like people that I have professional relationships didn't know me as a child. And when I was working in the area as a professional in the area that I grew up, I remember my third grade basketball coach was the executive director of the Chamber of Commerce there.
That's funny.
And that was all, like, I always felt so odd with that dynamic, because I was trying to make my name as a professional. And nothing negative about him. Like, he can't help it.
Yeah.
But, just coming into an environment where people have literally been around you growing up, like, what was that like?
It was interesting, but also, again, kind of like, already had that little bit of a built-in comfort level. Like, my direct manager is Tyler Snyder, and I think the last time I had actually seen him, like, in person, like, we were just swimming in my pool, like, in our backyard, and his children were over, like, we were hanging out all together. So it was just, it's funny that was like the last time I saw him. But I also tend to try to like make sure my work persona and my personal persona, while they are interconnected, but keeping it separate. So I was trying to prove that was a past me, and now I'm a new person. I'm a work person here. So it was interesting, but I think I dealt with it well, and I don't think it was a huge issue.
Which I think is fair for any type of relationship outside of work. If you're friends with somebody outside of work and then suddenly you're coworkers, it does have to change. Professional settings are different. Even if, we're friends, we all get along here, like we come to our sales meetings and we chit chat, like it's all cool, but it's going to be completely different than if we were, just like grabbing dinner somewhere completely unrelated to work. Like, it just has to change, and those dynamics have to be able to evolve. I can imagine it was comforting, but also kind of cool to have almost this natural motivator to come in, and, people are friendly. Like, there's not really this negative perception of, quote unquote Nepo baby coming in. But also it's like, you want to prove yourself that it's like, I earned this job. Like, I'm qualified for this. Can you talk a little bit more about that, just like natural motivator without it necessarily being the most negative thing?
Yeah. And I think a huge kind of theme in all of my like careers or the jobs that I've had is I just love like learning new things. And if you put something in front of me and it's like, okay, you have to understand this in the next X amount of days or time, like that is a challenge for me and I love it. So I just kind of view this as another challenge to dive into and just to like kind of attack it from all different angles and like think about the creativity aspect, like how kind of just using all different aspects of my other jobs moving into this role. And just knowing that I had also like just I had the resources to back myself up and I had the knowledge to just back everything up. So just motivated extremely by just the thought of challenges and knowing that it wasn't going to be an easy transition or that it was going to be a little bit of a weird scenario having the pre-existing knowledge, but also having to learn so much new things.
Can you tell us a little bit, especially the listeners that don't know, the first position that you came into at Innovative when you were hired as a full-time employee? Like, in my opinion, I think it's one of the hardest jobs in the company. like, just describe what that role was.
Yeah, so I came in as a sales assistant, and I was a marketing assistant, still kind of doing that graphic design role, but really focusing on the sales aspect. And what we do there is we provide a lot of the quotes that our customers see. So like with our account managers, they'll present these quotes or just present solutions. And we're all usually behind that, building them and providing some strategy support as well. And just making sure that everything is accounted for and that projects will go smoothly, solutions will go smoothly, all of that fun stuff. But in order to do that, you have to have all of that knowledge of every single thing that you're quoting. So whether it's PCs or cybersecurity bundles or I'm trying to think of SFPs and stacking.
A million things.
So many different things. And I remember like the first week I was a little bit overwhelmed because I did not have a background in technology whatsoever. I went to school for art and management basically. So I remember being a little daunted that there was so much to learn. But again, like that was just like a fun way to run into the challenge.
Yeah. I mean, it's a role in this company that one interfaces with every single department in the company. So you're supporting sales. You have to be familiar with everything that the company sells and how almost, I mean, you're almost serving as like a pre-engineer as well because you have to engineer it, build it, make sure that we're quoting even silly things like making sure if this copier needs a base and that one doesn't, knowing all of that about everything that we sell, working with purchasing, accounting, making sure that it gets invoiced correctly, making sure projects gets what's on their schedule and the techs know what customers have, what services. So I feel like that was an amazing role for you to land into, to really get that like 360 degree view of how the whole organization operates.
Yeah. And there had actually been some discussion like prior to coming into Innovative, like exactly where I wanted to land. And just the more and more that we talked about it, it was clear that sales was it because just a little bit of everything, a little bit of touching different departments, touching different, like a little bit of interacting with customers, but it's mostly internal like support and stuff like that. So I felt it was a great way to learn about the company as a whole and either see if it was a good fit or see if I needed to move on, but it turned out to be a very good fit.
And, you know, some people are just wired a certain way where it's, you know, maybe some want to kind of repeat the same thing over and over each day. They just like that, you know, kind of more simple routines, but you know, there's others that like to jump around and do different things. So I can relate in my role. It's like each day I'm doing something almost like drastically different, like shooting video and writing. They're not the same thing at all, but it's fun to be able to bounce around. It, you know, keeps it fresh in my brain. Do you feel that a little bit in your position as well? Just like having to know all these different things and you're jumping from department to department.
Yes, very much so. There is definitely a lot to juggle. And I don't think I've had the same 2 days here. It might consist of like similar things like quoting and responding to customers as XYZ, but like there's no two quotes are the same and no two scenarios are the same. And that was something that I really appreciated in my first job, especially working like in that art space as an executive assistant. Like I was just constantly responding to different things, or I was being sent to New York City for 3 months because we needed a general manager there. And we didn't have one. So it was a lot of like last minute things. And with my like second job, it was a lot less flexible. Like you're kind of still, you're pouring coffees every single day. There's not too much variation aside from like the people you're servicing. There's not too much variation. So it was important for me to come back into a role that did have variety and spontaneity and some healthy chaoticness. Healthy chaos.
Yeah. I was wondering maybe if your perception has changed at all, or if you've learned anything, you know, fundamentally different about the company, because, you know, it went from like, well, this is the family business to now I'm an employee and now you're a manager. Has your perception of innovative, you know, not even for better or worse, changed at all?
I think really just understanding how strong the culture is here. And of course, I've heard like my parents having conversations about our core values and things like that over the years, but I didn't understand until I experienced it how strong our culture was and how many people are just champions of innovative. Like just talking with Marcy, for instance, who I knew very well from just hanging around the office growing up, but she's been here for so long and still like speaks highly of innovative. So that was just great to see. And again, like something I knew existed, but I didn't truly understand it until I was here.
Yeah. And that's so cool because you probably, you know, if you're here for so long, you see the business at its best and probably at its worst. Like you've seen all the varying levels of it. So to still be here and love it and just be as friendly as anybody, that it does speak to the culture. And I think that's an interesting perspective I haven't heard, because we talk so often about innovative and innovative culture on this podcast. And it's all like this fun, like sunshine and rainbows. We all get along. We have fun events, blah, blah, blah. And I imagine to a certain portion of the audience, if they don't know innovative super well, you know, I'm sure maybe they've heard of us, they're listening to the podcast, that can all sound just like very corny, I guess. Like, and I'm not going to be mad at somebody who would think that, because it's like, until you experience it, which you've brought that perspective, like, you don't really know it till you are in it.
Yeah. And even working like as a graphic designer and like kind of that more limited and not a full-time role with Innovative, I could see it. And I remember joining just a handful of our company meetings just to start familiarizing myself with folks. And that's like kind of when the seeds started getting planted of like, okay, wait, maybe where I'm currently at isn't exactly where I wanted to be, because the culture here is just so amazing and like it's very attractive and it was a great motivator to want to work here.
And we would be remiss if we did not congratulate you on your recent promotion.
Thank you.
To the management role. Yes. So you've talked a bit about the role that you came into. Tell us a bit about your new role.
So right now I am the sales support manager and I support the existing sales assistant team. So the team that I was on and working with. And so that's been a really fun kind of journey now moving into more of the manager role. And it's also been kind of an interesting journey to manage, just having worked with the folks that I'm now leading. I had experienced that quite a few times in my previous roles and previous jobs, but it's also different when it's, again, like your family's company and you're trying to make a mark. But it was a very fun journey. And my team is amazing. I work with Cassie and Lisa, and it's a fun time every single day. Cassie and I often just send notes back and forth with each other during meetings and stuff like that. So it's great. And I also lead a fully remote team. So that has its fun perks and challenges as well. So we do a lot of virtual lunches and just chats and whatnot. But aside from like those sales assistant duties that I am still doing just in a different capacity, I also assist our existing business sales manager and CIO, Tyler Snyder, and just kind of assist him where I can.
I hadn't even thought about that aspect because I was already going to ask you about the transition to manager, but managing a fully remote team, does it just require kind of extra attention, maybe some of those extra virtual lunches like you mentioned, just to kind of keep the feel of a team? Because I can imagine that can be pretty tough. And especially being a smaller team, you want to be kind of close-knit because there's only so many of us.
Exactly. And it's very important to me too that despite the physical distance between us, that there isn't any distance in the team. So I just always try to make sure that there's open, honest communication. And especially when you can't just walk up to somebody's desk and be like, hey, like my head is killing me today, I need to go home. And it's a little more awkward to be like, have to write it out and stuff like that. And tone can always be misperceived over texting and stuff like that. So you have to figure out how to filter what you're seeing and not immediately jump to like, oh, this is how I would interpret it. Like, no, it's texting. It's different.
Yeah. And sometimes that takes getting to know somebody in person or face to face, at least, you know, whether it's on a screen or in person, which, you know, we at least get them in the office like once or twice a year, like, you know, not asking too much. I believe, what is it?
Twice a year.
Just twice a year to come in. And whether it's just like you know, to come in on a regular day or come to an event or a company meeting, just so there's a little bit more of that connection. Because, you know, part of being a team is obviously we work together, we have our meetings together virtually or otherwise, but part of being a team is also coming in and just making small talk on a Monday morning. How was your weekend? Those little things. And so there probably is, you know, that kind of extra step you have to take with the virtual people just to make sure that connection isn't lost as well, because we want them to feel a part of the team also. Like, it's one thing for all of us to be here and they're just, you know, doing their own thing, working hard, but it's like, we want them to also be like, you know, I'm connected to them just as they are to each other, even though they're in person. So
yeah, I think I get like giddy when they get come into the office. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh yeah, like I have my team here. Like, it's so exciting. But
it's awesome.
I just always try to make sure that the innovative culture is felt for them as well, and that they're not just on their own little island by themselves or anything like that.
That's awesome. I know as you were working on becoming a manager, and obviously you came into Innovative at a time when we were really embracing EOS, which is obviously a huge topic on this podcast. I know you went through some EOS related training to kind of prepare for your management role. Not that you hadn't been a manager before, but tell us a little bit about those experiences.
It really flipped a lot of the things that I knew already being a manager in previous roles. Like, it just flipped it on its head. And I learned so much, especially from reading those initial books and going to a few trainings. But following the LMA kind of guidance just makes a lot of sense. And it was something that wasn't always very apparent to me, or that wasn't like explained to me very well in previous roles when I was expected to lead different departments or different people. So I just remember coming out of those trainings and being like, oh, light bulbs going off in my head, because just so much made sense now. And having such a guide to back it up and actually see like other people's results and hearing other people having success with it, just was extremely motivated. And I came away very excited.
So since not all of our listeners maybe are as ingrained in EOS as we are, can you explain what LMA is to the folks out there?
A little test. So I believe it's lead, manage, and hold accountable.
Yep.
So, and that's kind of just making sure you're leading your team correctly in the right direction and following their like following core values, but also following their job description, and making sure that you're managing it correctly, and then hold it like there's no obstacles in the way. I remember that really stood out to me, was managing isn't about just being like, oh no, you can't do that and you can't do this. It's removing obstacles and just making sure everyone has like knows exactly where they're going and what the end result should be. And then holding accountable is just making sure we're getting there. So kind of having like the three steps, it just made a lot of sense.
And I'll give a bit of a plug to our EOS implementer, Brian White. So Lauren actually attended his How to Be a Great Boss workshop, which if anyone listening is interested, he is actually hosting another one this summer in DC. It's going to be at the Marriott Marquis on Friday, June 14th from 8 to 4 p.m. I think we can probably get the links and everything out on social media, but I just wanted to give a quick little plug to that workshop because I know it's been great for our folks that have attended it.
I definitely highly recommend it.
When did you come on at Innovative full-time relative to when we first started EOS? Do you know?
I am not. I came in end of December 2021. Okay. So I'm not totally sure when we had officially started, but I knew it was all around the same time.
Yeah, I think we, through the pandemic, we were going to start working with a professional implementer. Just the state of everything being a little uncertain, we didn't feel like that was the best time to start something new like that. So in, I think, summer of 2022, we did our 90-minute meeting with our implementer. And then end of 2022, we had our first kind of like quasi-quarterly planning session / annual planning vision day to go into 2023. And then 2023 has been our first full year. We wrapped up our vision day and now we're back into our quarterly planning pulsing.
I ask, first off, good backstory for Innovative's EOS kind of journey, because I don't know if we've ever explicitly kind of laid it out like that. But I also wanted to ask Lauren in her experience, because I could, even when I first came on, like I could feel that we are starting to really implement EOS. And so, okay, that the timeline adds up there. But I wanted to ask, the biggest difference you feel in the business, and you don't have to put a number on anything, but just general kind of day-to-day operations or what you're feeling in meetings, What's been the biggest difference you think EOS has brought to Innovative?
I feel like EOS has done a really great job now of kind of laying the roadmap of Innovative. So I think that was the biggest difference. And again, having some of that background or in like knowing information from just mm-hmm. my parents, it's really cool actually seeing it on paper and like knowing we have like direct goals tied to 2030 and beyond. And even if it's a vending machine or things like that, which I've always remembered that every single time it's on there. So I think that has been something that has really jumped out to me. It's not that before, like it was an unknown, like, oh, we're just stagnant or we're not doing anything, but having clear goals that we know that we're working for and that we can build all of our other goals and our roles around just makes it night and day difference.
Yeah. And I do feel like EOS, you know, I think our company meetings have always been very transparent and very useful. And I think a lot of people really appreciate it. But the way EOS has really just solidified the way we condense the meeting down into the most important stuff, and people know what to expect. Like, we're in such a good routine now with the VTO and looking over that. And, you know, the vending machine, it's my favorite thing of, it's like the funniest, like, it's not a make or break goal, but it is the funniest thing to see on there. But it does matter. Like, if we can get that vending machine, it probably means some other stuff's going pretty well also. Exactly. So that's I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't think that's been mentioned on the podcast either, that it's one of our, 10-year goals?
So for 2030,
yeah. 2030, we want a vending machine.
And to clarify to our listeners who are probably thinking, okay, I have heard that Innovative goes on kayaking trips and they do escape rooms and they do all these crazy things. Like, why the heck can't they give their employees a vending machine? So when this building was renovated, we had these grand plans of bringing a vending machine into it mm-hmm. for our employees to enjoy because they'd been asking for it. And we had the vending machine company come out, and turns out a vending machine will not fit through the door. we have heard that if you put one outside, there's some vandalism and theft issues that come with that. So it is our long-term goal to rectify that problem and to bring a vending machine into this building.
That's another, like, that's the value of having innovative people on the podcast, is that we can kind of go through stuff that's like obvious to us, but is to a new audience is so funny. So that's some
innovative lore for you.
Right.
The innovative lore. I love the innovative lore. You hear so many backstories from people and stuff the band has done. I can't get enough of that. That'll be one day when we have the content machine, like, at full strength, and there's like multiple people here, we will start a second podcast that's just the innovative floor, because I think that would be so fun.
I was just thinking, like, we should have the innovative jam band on as a guest, like our
wow. And yeah. it'd be a radio show. We'd yes. have our musical guest, yes. and
have a little interlude.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yes, they hopefully our an original intro at some point, and not our, we love our intro, thank you to our podcasting software for it, but man, it would be great to have an original intro. I wanted to ask more about your graphic design expertise, because I know that's a great passion of yours, and just art in general. When did that kind of start in your life? When did you first realize that's something you were into?
So graphic design specifically kind of came out when I was in college, because part of my required courses, we had to take some form of digital media class. And I was like, well, graphic design is probably the most like applicable to real life, so let's see how that goes. And I fell right in love with it. But art for me has always been like a constant. Like, I remember even as a kid, like, always trying to go paint. I would follow my mom along. She was a photographer, and I would just have my own little tiny camera like behind her trying to take pictures as well. Actually, some of my very first original shots are of the Innovative original office, and it's like super, super close-ups of like motherboards and stuff like that. it was always something that like, I just never thought I could actually do, like actually make it work for work purposes or do it professionally. So then I ended up going to school for it and did end up working professionally in the art field. But it's
awesome.
It's just something that I always enjoy. It's just creativity and just seeing artists' minds. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people get that feeling where it's like, art is great, but can I make a career out of it? And can I, yep. You know, pay to live? Can I make a living wage doing art, basically? Because it's really tough. And I mean, no matter the industry, it's really difficult. We can tie it back to technology a little bit, being someone with a passion for art, and AI is all the rage, and you know, it's generating all kinds of new stuff and people are talking about the validity of it. You know, where do you stand on kind of that issue of you know, AI art, I guess we'll call it?
So I have a lot of feedback on this because the art space I worked at was an art and technology space. Mm. So even though when I was into art, I was still working with technology. But it's a very fine line because I know like in our classes and just working with other artists, it's always been a conversation of, well, is that truly art or is it something because you're using something else? Is it not art?
Yeah.
And it really kind of just comes down to what you define as art, which is, it makes it so open-ended and it hurts people's brains sometimes. But there was a lot of discussion back in like the 60s when like major artists like Andy Warhol, they had assistants and they would give them instructions and they would go and they would screen print and they were the ones actually pushing the ink and actually burning the images onto the screen and stuff like that. And there was a lot of like discussion like, well, he's not actually the one that's doing it. So does that mean that he's still the artist? And I feel like that's kind of like a similar argument you can make today with AI and all of that, because you're still giving them the instructions. So you're still kind of creating the code for it or just the set of circumstances. So it kind of just up to you how much you want to say this is AI or this is my artwork. And I know a lot of artists that do use AI for like massive forms of art and that are like being displayed in major places, they're often creating their own code. They're often creating their own like softwares and stuff like that to do this. So I think it goes a lot deeper than just like, okay, AI is creating this image because there's somebody originally behind that. But it's a fascinating conversation. We could probably talk about it forever.
Oh, we definitely could, because it's such a easy rabbit hole and there's so much nuance to it because, yeah, like you could go into whatever Bing's latest feature is and you could type in just, you know, SpongeBob on a bike and it could make SpongeBob on a bike. And it's like, well, that is exactly what I asked for. But, you know, you didn't invent SpongeBob. Like you didn't really, you know, you typed in what you wanted to see. And that is, you know, it seems like an original thought. I'm sure it's been done before, but like, is that art? Like what? It really depends, I guess. And there's so much nuance between all these different things. Because I think I would consider that much different than somebody maybe using Photoshop's newest generative AI to just fix little features and do little things. So yeah, we could spend again another podcast on that, I'm sure. Because I want to get your thoughts, because you know, AI is all the rage, and you know, you can tie it back to people's work where people in positions like mine are using it to draft up certain things. And obviously you have to really proofread stuff, and edits are necessary. I think if you just leave it as is, that's where a line's definitely crossed in my mind, because you have just said write me this and then copied and pasted. That to me is not the intent, or at least, you know, I don't think it's capable of that currently full time. Do you use AI much in your role currently? I know there's certain kind of AI tools that are getting kind of blended into some stuff we use.
Yeah, I've used it like a little bit. Like Illustrator has it now. And I've done it like to kind of make repeatable patterns and stuff like that. But I'm still pretty old school when it comes to that. So I often draw my own like vectors and stuff like that and then scan them in. So but that's just me.
I do think, I do want to point out that you said I do not have a background in technology. And then you explained to us that you worked in art and tech. But also, I know we've talked about this before. What age was it when you started building servers?
I think it was 3. I think that's like kind of the age that we've like landed on. But I just always remember, like, if any time my dad had anything at home, I just would go and help him and work with him. And I just was always very fascinated about what he was doing. So I think 3, but it might have even been like a little bit earlier, but 3 is where we'll land.
Do you think you maybe retained more technology knowledge growing up than you give yourself credit for? Like, have you ever found that other people in your life who just, you know, aren't tech people, you tend to just have more knowledge, even though it's not necessarily intentional?
Yes. And I would withhold or give that information as I saw fit, like in college. Because if somebody's like, oh, does anybody know technology? Like, I do not know. Like, I don't know how to fix this projector, when I probably could have. But yeah, there is quite often, like, especially I went to St. Mary's and Grady here in Hagerstown, and we would also do some work with them. So it'd be oftentimes like if something broke in the middle of the day, they would call me first. And I'm like, IT person, but I will give my best try. But yeah, it's been a funny thing.
And that probably comes down to like, if somebody's from around here and they know Innovative or they know the Rappaport's, like there's almost an assigned reputation. You might hate technology. Like, yep. You know, luckily you like it and you work here and you're great at your job, but you might have grown up and I think it'd be very easy for certain kids to just be like, I'm not my parents. I'm not doing anything relating to that. Was that ever a struggle? I mean, if you were three building servers, I would imagine you thought technology was great, but
actually, so yes, growing up, like I would say my formative years, like especially when like the office was at home and it was all kind of together. I would say I was a huge champion for technology, loved, like was very pro innovative, like wanted to work there and stuff like that. What was between being innovative or being a mom, basically the two things that my parents were doing, I wanted to be one of them. But as I kind of got to high school and like, I don't know if it was just teenage rebellion or whatever it was, that's when I kind of started focusing more on the arts and being a little bit more interested in not technology. And at that point, I was like, I don't want to do anything with innovative. I don't want to work here. I don't want to do anything with technology. Like, I want to forge my own way, like make my own path. I want to own my own company, all of this stuff. But it's just funny how like, so yeah. Much like 10 each 10 years can change.
I think sometimes also we perceive teenage rebellion, or we misperceive it, I guess, because I think it's just a person finding out who they really are and their personal interests. Because especially as a younger kid, you're very influenced by your surroundings and your parents or whoever's raising you. That's just kind of all you know. And then you kind of, you know, especially like high school, it's like a real big step toward independence when you're, you know, you have 5 minutes in between classes to be in the hallway, talk to whoever you want, do whatever, more elective opportunities. And so I think as you get into that age, you do start to kind of find yourself more and, you know, people get into college. So, there is a fine line. And I think we even assign it to ourselves as like, I was a teenager, I was just doing. But no, I think it's us finding ourselves, because as you get older and, I mean, people will go into their 50s and 60s and change careers. Like it happens. You learn new things about yourself. Because we've had so many guests on this podcast say, well, I went to school for this and I liked it and that's what I wanted to do and I got my degree. And then you get out of school and you take whatever opportunities presented to you and they get to a new role and they go, oh, well, this is what I want to do. And they come on the podcast like, yeah, I've been doing it for 20 years now. So I was just wondering, because you did make a point to say, you know, you wanted to leave your own mark on the world. You wanted to do your own thing. And I was just wondering how much of that is, you know, the intentional act of doing something different, and how much of it is that's just your interest. That's just what you liked.
I think it was probably more towards the interest, because in my family, music has been such a large part of our lives. And that was really what I was like focusing on in high school, especially as I was kind of like, okay, maybe I don't want to be like an actual artist in my career, but I do want to work with artists. Like, what could that look like? And I remember like, I was like, well, music, like my family would always go to concerts or different venues, or just, it'd be like a Friday night after school or whatever. We would come home, we'd all be exhausted from either work, school, XYZ. We would just put on like a latest album or something and just sit there and sing along for like 5 or 6 hours. So I just like, I still had that like wanting to be kind of connected with my family in some capacity, but I still wanted to do my own thing. And that's like kind of going back to like, I feel like I've lived multiple lives in like the last not even 10 years, because I'm 27. But like, I originally went for music and entertainment and wanting to be like an agent to like an actual manager of talent. Then it shifted so much.
Yeah. Yeah. My friend, I think one of my friends went to school for music industry and now he's a journalist. It's just random stuff like that. And sometimes you get out of college and you get into the world and you take an opportunity, and sometimes there's a realization of, you know, I need to do this to survive, and then this can just become like a big hobby of mine. I was fortunate enough that this job is like exactly what I went to school for, and I'm probably the only person I know who actually did that, so I'm very fortunate on that front. But yeah, just an interesting topic. And we've really dug into the psyche of young people on this podcast.
And I don't think we've ever had a guest on this podcast that like they had nobody's had a linear path.
No.
Yeah.
It's not really possible, I don't think in the world.
Yeah. And I remember that being like a kind of a comfort that my dad would say, because like, even like, I think I changed my major 20 times. Like, I changed the last day that I could possibly change it, I changed to something else because I was like, I don't know what I want to do. And I remember like my dad just saying, like, half the people that work for me currently aren't actually using their degree for what they got their degree in. So that was kind of reassuring, just kind of taking some of the pressure off of like, okay, I need to figure out exactly what I'm doing for the rest of my life right this second. And like knowing that there can be some flexibility and that you can change your mind.
Yeah. And I think it's fair to have that feeling at any point in life also, because there's still people, like I mentioned earlier, it's like you could be near retirement and just be like, I just want to do this because that's what I want to do now. And people change and evolve. So that's always, that's such a good message, because like the people come in and it's kind of like an unspoken thing of like, I did this and now I do this. And it's like, well, this person's like super successful in what they do. And they did not go to college for anything relevant to what they're doing now. Like, you can learn certain skills and certain ideas, but it's just not, life is certainly not linear.
Yeah. And I think, you know, some of the best skills are transferable skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the what somebody can bring to a new industry or a new job who is coming from a completely different place, like, just introduces such a new perspective. Like, I know when we had Rose Fetters on the podcast, we were even talking about, like, you know, she and I came into Innovative having had careers before this in other sectors. And then we have kind of the other half of the leadership team 100% came up through Innovative. And like, both of them have such value, but it's a balance of, you know, I know the history of this role in this industry. And okay, let me tell you how other places do it. And like, that's so valuable to have both perspectives.
Lauren, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. This was great.
Yes, I think we're going to go eat some pizza now and enjoy ourselves. So you listener, hopefully you can go enjoy some pizza or some good food yourself. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.